Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and same-sex marriage has now been the law of the land for a little while, and all the benefits of marriage are available to everybody. But of course, that means the bad parts of marriage, too, and divorce, also open to all Americans. My next guest has written a practical and legal how-to on marriage, geared mostly toward LGBT couples, but that can be used by anybody. Her name is Elizabeth Schwartz, and she's a Florida attorney specializing in LGBT family law. Her new book is called Before I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay and Otherwise. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Thanks so much for having me.
Let's talk first about taxes. A lot of people think there are tax benefits to marriage, which there often are, but there are instances where that's not actually the case. Can you give us an example of when it might not make tax sense for a couple to tie the knot?
Absolutely. I love that you go right to taxes. You know, the meat of the issue, whenever I've given talks to groups, mixed groups, sometimes sort of mainstream groups, and when I immediately start talking about taxes, they say, God, why do gay people have to think about taxes before they get married? I mean, who does that? And my answer is always, we all should. Everyone should think about the tax implications of getting married. So absolutely, it's the case that for many couples, there is a marriage bonus. It tends to be when there's a substantial income disparity. So one member of the couple earns quite a bit more or quite a bit less than the other. When the incomes are more or less the same, whether they're high earners or on the lower end of the income spectrum, that marriage penalty can show up, and people get sometimes really beastly tax bills, putting a crimp on the old honeymoon there.
And you write about older couples sometimes deciding not to get married, especially if one has experienced the death of a spouse, having to do with Social Security and other retirement benefits?
That's correct. Social Security benefits could be paid to a widow or widower for many years after the death of a spouse, but then when you remarry, if you remarry before age 60, you lose those benefits. So depending on people's individual circumstances, if they are getting Social Security based on a deceased spouse or an ex-spouse if they divorced, they want to make sure that they check with the, so you could just call up the Social Security office, actually, and before you get married and see what's going to happen to your benefits when you get married, especially for older adults. What we often see are people who are on certain kinds of means-based benefits, meaning that you get certain benefits based on your household income. And then, as you can imagine, if you get married and your household income changes, you might be jeopardizing those benefits. So we see that a lot. Where there are cases like with Social Security, disability income, SSDI, that's a needs-based form of government assistance. So you've got to prove not only medical need, but you also have to prove your income and assets. So that could be so once you get married, that could result in a review of the assets, and you could be disqualified from those benefits. Hmm.
My guest is Elizabeth Schwartz, and she's a Florida attorney specializing in LGBT family law. Her new book is called Before I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay and Otherwise. And who has a question for Elizabeth Schwartz? 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. She will give you non-legally binding advice.
Thank you for having my back on that.
212-433-9692. Let's see. Florida, where you practiced, was not one of the states that had legal same-sex marriage before the Supreme Court decision, was it?
You are wrong. I'm delighted to tell you.
Uh-huh.
As a Florida native and someone who worked on our marriage litigation, the state case that was brought by the National Center for Lesbian Rights and Equality Florida Institute, I'm proud to tell you that our marriage ban was taken down in January 2015. We brought it down ourselves. So I'm thrilled about that because it's nice to have done it on our own steam. But you're correct that Florida was not at the front end.
Yeah.
We were the 36th state to pass marriage equality. So we're glad it happened. We wish it happened sooner. And certainly for many couples, we're reminded that marriage happened not soon enough. We've got lots of couples and lots of clients and friends over the years who lost parental rights to their child because they weren't able to solidify their parental rights, who were kicked out of homes, denied spousal support, all that stuff. So we're thrilled we got it. We wish we had it sooner, and we hope that it sticks and folks get married in a very deliberate way so we can give honor to this institution that's honored us.
So it was still just last year, months before the Supreme Court made its ruling. So
that's
probably
right.
A lot of couples who were living together and waiting till it was legal to tie the knot rushed to do it. Is there a biggest thing in your practice that you're finding that couples are coming in surprised about that they need your help with now that they did get married?
Yes, there are a few things. One thing that I'm surprised about is how many people think that because they got married that they've got parental rights to their partner's or their spouse's child. There seems to be this sense that, oh, well, now I'm legal, now I've got rights, and they don't understand that they still do need to confirm those parental rights with an adoption. I think the other thing that I'm finding just has to do generally with the consequences of marriage from an asset perspective, and that's really one of the main things that gave birth to this book. You know, couples who get married and then say, what do you mean I have to give up half of my retirement account on divorce? Or what do you mean my child from the prior relationship doesn't get what I wanted him or her to get in my estate plan because now the spouse has all these automatic rights? So they're and who could blame us? We most of us never thought we would live to see marriage equality, so it wasn't like we were paying attention all these years to what we saw our friends going through necessarily. Sometimes it's just kind of takes us by surprise, so that's why we thought it wise to write up a good legal guide so folks could get a sense of not just before they get married, but even once you are married. It's good to know what rights that marriage affords you and what rights it doesn't.
Mark in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. You have a question for Elizabeth.
Yes, I do. I was curious about your income disparity thing. My boyfriend makes considerably more than me, so would the marriage bonus help him or help me if we got married?
Well, lucky you. I think the only answer to that, I got to give you the lawyer answer to that, which is it depends, and you really ought to talk to your tax preparer. But the short answer beyond that is that you do have to file your taxes jointly. I mean, every couple that gets married, you have to file your taxes jointly. You can file them married filing separately or married filing together. I understand from most tax preparers that it's typically the case that married filing jointly is the better way to go. It's not often the case that married filing separately is advantageous. But so when you ask the question, will it hurt him or will it help me, you'll be one unit filing taxes together. So will it help the bottom line of the family or will it hurt the bottom line of the family? It's based on what I understand in my experience and what I've been told from tax preparers, including the one who wrote a little cameo in my book, is that you are likely to come out better. You are likely to save on taxes, and the reason being that your lesser income will lower your partner's tax bracket. So you'll pay overall less taxes because together you'll be in a lower tax bracket than he was individually.
So I can tell him if we get married, he will most likely pay less taxes.
Well, if that sweetens the proposal. But I would definitely go see the tax preparer first and really run the numbers. Or I think you might even be able to do it online. There are different websites like tax calculators and H&R Block and stuff where you could just run the numbers individually and then run them together. And hopefully I'm right, and you will end up saving, and that'll that'll sweeten the deal.
Mark, thanks for the call, and good luck to you and your boyfriend. You tell the story in the book of a couple named William and Alan, and
yes,
their thoughts on marriage were in line with what you call the ick factor. They thought marriage was a heteronormative bourgeois institution for which they had no use, and they lamented the mainstreaming of the gay community and resented the expectation that all couples want to be monogamous, married with kids. But then they got married. What changed their minds?
Well, in the case of William and Alan, which are pulled right from experiences that I've had in my practice, what happened was they got caught in an awful hospital situation where Alan suffered a heart attack, and when he went to the emergency room, William was prevented from accessing him in the hospital, prevented from making medical decisions. Now, they didn't even bother doing any estate planning documents, which we've seen a lot. I've seen a lot of times couples say, oh, why even bother doing that healthcare surrogate? No one's even going to recognize it. This is an example of a couple that so enjoys living off the grid that they didn't even put the most basic paperwork in place. So for William and Alan, they decided once they had a medical scare that they were better off to get married, because Alan's mother came out of the woodwork to start hovering, making medical decisions, and hoping to get her hands on the cash assets.
Ben in New Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ben. Ben, you there?
Can you hear me?
Sorry,
yep. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's a little noisy, but give it a shot.
Yeah, so really quickly. So my question is regarding post-divorce, when one person moves out of the country. You know, we have almost no guarantee that the other country is going to accept the custody order that's accepted here. And then we're left limited to our resources by the UCCJEA, which states we can only modify or adjust our custody order where the children are living, even if that country doesn't accept the U.S. custody order.
Oh, boy.
So
yeah.
For me, I have a custody order here that they don't recognize. I can't change it here because it has to be done there. And over there, they have another one, and they don't recognize ours.
Oh, gosh. Yes, international child custody issues is an absolute unbelievable nightmare, and there are lawyers who spend their whole lives focusing on exactly those issues of the, like, PKPA, the Parent Child Protection Kidnapping Act, and I mean, it's just a very scary prospect. Do you have a good lawyer there in New Brunswick who has experience dealing with international cases? Because if not, I would say you could email me and I could send you somebody.
And the access from the State Department is only that they can audit the process and then document that the country did or did not comply with our policy, yet they cannot help me other than filing that country did not comply.
That's absolutely right. Everyone is hobbled at the knees.
Yeah. Ben, do you have a lawyer, or do you need a referral from Elizabeth?
I could always use a referral. I have a lawyer there, and I'm supposed to have another hearing there. It's probably my 10th.
Oh,
in
boy.
December.
Wow.
Where's there? In the Netherlands. In the Netherlands. Oh, dear. Yeah. Well, there. I mean, at least you're dealing with a Hague country, and so, right? You mean they're on the grid.
Yeah.
They're a civilized nation that respects the United States court order, or not at all?
I'm going to have to leave it here because we're running out of time.
Oh, okay.
But
all right.
We'll take Ben's contact off the air, since it sounds like you might have a a local lawyer in our area up here to refer him to. So we'll just take his contact.
Okay, yeah, sounds like a good idea. Maybe good to have somebody else eyeball the matter.
Yeah. So last thing, to kind of sum it up, here you are, somebody who obviously celebrates the legality of same-sex marriage and helps couples, as a lawyer, who are planning to get married all the time. But you make a big point in your book of saying there are also alternatives to marriage that might appeal to some LGBT couples. Why is sometimes a good idea not to get married, to explore alternatives?
There are many dozens of reasons that are so individual to different people as to why they might not want to get married. I think I threw out some 10 reasons in the book just to keep it simple. But it could be any of the issues that we've talked about, whether it's concerns about taxes, wanting to make sure your inheritance plans stay intact as you had planned, you know, concerns about what happens in the event of divorce, the ick factor. Some folks just are not feeling that marriage is the right institution for them. Lots of folks, again, those means-based benefits have legitimate concerns for people. So there are lots of reasons why folks might choose not to marry, and they should take the steps to legitimize their relationships under the law otherwise. So, estate planning, contract techniques, very important.
So the moral of the story, just because you can get married, it doesn't necessarily mean you should.
That's right.
As contained in the new book by Florida marriage attorney Elizabeth Schwartz, and she specializes in LGBT family law, and her new book is called Before I Do, A Legal Guide to Marriage, Gay, and Otherwise. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, why New York and New Jersey are in conflict over how to rebuild the Port Authority bus terminal. Stay with us.